which is available.
Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, January 31st. I'm off. January 31st, 2020. I'm Ray, and my partner at the mic for the next hour is Diane. We're pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are the headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. The camera was a natural extension of himself. Opposing opinions at bond hearing. Youth straw poll shows divide. And today's weather. A bit of snow with little or no accumulation. Freezing fog in the morning. Expect less than 2 hours of sunshine with a 55% chance of precipitation and average relative humidity of 90%. Drying conditions poor, low clouds breaking tonight, average relative humidity 95%, partly sunny tomorrow. And now with the first story, here's Diane.
The camera was a natural extension of himself, photographer remembered at Surf Ballroom Display. And there is a large color picture of the display at the Surf, and the caption reads, Globe Gazette photographer Elwin Musser was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for his work covering the 1959 plane crash, which killed rock stars Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper, and pilot Roger Peterson. A display honoring Musser was recently unveiled by the Surf Ballroom and Museum. The late Globe Gazette photographer who captured the iconic images of the day the music died is being honored at the Surf Ballroom and Museum in Clear Lake. That's thanks to a portable display featuring the 4x5 speed graphic camera, flash, and film holders Elwin Musser used to photograph the plane crash that killed rock and roll stars Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and LP the Big Bopper Richardson on February 3, 1959, near Clear Lake. It's another story to tell, said Lori Leitz, Surf Ballroom and Museum Executive Director. I always say there are a lot of stories to tell within these walls. Musser, who died on March 28, 2015, at 95, worked for the Globe Gazette from 1946 to 1981. He was the newspaper's first full-time photographer. The equipment, which the Globe Gazette gifted him when he retired, is on permanent loan to the Surf Ballroom for display. It's just the perfect location because of all the history, said Marilyn Regner, one of Musser's four children. I don't think it should be anywhere else. Regner gave her father's equipment to the Surf Ballroom in August after seeing its museum. The display, positioned in the southeast corner of the Surf Lounge, was revealed Wednesday ahead of the ballroom's annual winter dance party. The winter dance party was started in 1979 to commemorate the 20th anniversary of Holly, Valens, and Richardson's last performance at the Surf Ballroom. This year marks the 61st anniversary of the infamous winter dance party concert tour and the plane crash that killed the three rock and roll legends and pilot Roger Peterson. Musser was the only photographer to cover the now infamous event. He captured everything from the wreckage to the bodies of the music legends in the snow. His photo was selected in 1999 as a photo of the century by the Associated Press. All his pictures were important, but they just felt the camera needed a home, Light said. Although the Holly crash photo was his most famous, Musser compiled a diverse body of work in the 35 years he worked at the Globe Gazette. President Harry Truman's stop in Manly in 1952, the visit of Pope John Paul II in Des Moines in 1979, a steam engine and diesel train collision in 1949, and the deadly Braniff Airlines crash in Swaledale in 1954 were just a few of the many historic moments he caught on film. He saw a lot of tragedy and, thankfully, a tremendous amount of good in the everyday goings-ons and events of the people of North Iowa, Regner said. Photography was her father's life, passion, and hobby, she said. There was hardly a moment he didn't have a camera or two around his neck. Musser began his career with a 4x5 speed graphic camera, switching to 35mm before his retirement, but later he started using digital cameras. The camera was a natural extension of himself, Regner said. Regner hopes to visit the display with her mother, Elsie Musser, this summer. She said the beautiful display memorializes the life's work of her father. He was just a wonderful, wonderful person, Regner said. I miss him every day. Ray?
Opposing opinions at bond hearing. Clear Lake CSD, $18 million referendum is discussed. And this is brought to us by Grace Sapolinski and comes to us from Clear Lake. The first of three public informational hearings for Clear Lake Community School District's $18 million bond referendum brought opposing viewpoints on the proposed wellness center, though most people in the audience were in favor of the referendum. In preparation for the March 3rd election, it was in which district residents will vote on the bond referendum, Clear Lake CSD held its first public informational meeting at the Clear Lake Middle School Commons Wednesday night. Superintendent Doug Gee led the hearing, giving those who attended some background on the three main projects the bond issue will be used for. First, a secure entrance for the Clear Lake Elementary, updating the Lion Field Complex and the Wellness Center. Second, the proposed Health, Fitness, and Wellness Center and all that entails. And third, how the bond will affect property taxes. We want to be as transparent as possible, he said. We serve you. After Gee presented all the bond information, the floor was open to questions, and a few people asked about topics like parking and how the ballot question was written. Clear Lake resident George Case asked if the Wellness Center project tied with the other school projects because he supports the other school projects but not the Wellness Center. I plan to vote no because of the Wellness Center for Community, because it will have an impact upon several small businesses in the community, Case said. Because of the way the ballot question was written, the Wellness Center is tied with the other school projects, and it is too late to change it, as the deadline for submitting the question for the March 3rd election was January 17th. There actually is more than two school projects. There's like about eight, and we don't want to have eight different questions on the ballot, Gee said. He said the school district and the city of Clear Lake don't believe they are going to put some of the fitness facilities out of business, but anyone who owns one in Clear Lake can reach out to the district and the city. We're not in business to put somebody else in business, because there are other facilities in town, he said. There are three fitness centers and a number of health and wellness businesses in Clear Lake. And Case said, because Clear Lake is a fairly big city, they don't have the small-town businessman cranked into this. I don't think they have given enough consideration to people that are in the health and wellness business, because if one of those businesses closes, nobody's going to care, Case said. Linda Muth, another Clear Lake resident, said she needed the walking track because there is no other fitness center that will let her walk on a treadmill or a track without having to pay for a full membership. All I want to do is walk, she said. All I want to do is walk on a treadmill 2 hours a day. Well, you have to buy a membership. I don't want a membership. I don't want to pump iron. I only want to walk. Clear Lake also receives 350,000 tourists per year, and Moose said that's a reason enough for the community to have a wellness center for tourists to come. We just need this, she said. We're one of the up-and-coming communities in the nation. Gee said the city and the district will have to look at membership fees if the bond passes, and if the bond passes, then when the center is built, to pay for staffing and maintenance of the building and equipment. Muth also said she was excited for the security entry to Clear Lake Elementary because she had an issue with someone threatening her a few years ago when she was teaching. We need that for the safety of the kids, she said. It's so important, so we have to get this passed. All the projects and improvements surrounding the high school will also include two parking lot additions totaling 140 new parking spaces. The Clear Lake High School Activity Director, Dale Ludwig, said having the additional parking spaces will be great for the school because current parking is inadequate. I've had people from other communities say we have a beautiful facility, but the parking stinks, he said. When the high school hosts events like tournaments and graduation, people who come need a place to park, and with the current amount of parking spaces available, many are parking on the grass, snowbanks, or the street, Ludwig said. I want to save that green space out there, and I like the circle drive, but I was convinced early this fall that maybe if we just save some of the green space and create more parking spaces, we could hold events better. We have a better parking situation, he said. Ludwig said he was in favor of the wellness center, too, because when he was coaching middle school basketball in the morning, he would find about five people walking around at 6 a.m. waiting for exercise in the school. Wouldn't it be a lot more fun and entertaining to do it in a wellness center, which having to wait for the school to open and give you access? Yeah, he said. More information could be found at the bond referendum site the school district created, and that's at sites.google.com/view/bond referendum. Diane?
Youth straw poll shows divide. Clear Lake, Mason City students on opposite sides. The Iowa Youth Straw Poll results are in, and Clear Lake High School students and Mason City Community School District's John Adams Middle School students vastly disagree on who their next president should be. Though President Donald Trump, Andrew Yang, and Bernie Sanders are the top three presidential candidates in Iowa's Secretary of State Paul Pates' Iowa Youth Straw Poll held Tuesday, Mason City Middle School students and Clear Lake High School students don't agree on that preference order. In Clear Lake High School, Trump was the clear winner, garnering 108 votes out of 213 total votes, 50.7% of the total vote, and 96.5% of the Republican vote. Trailing behind Trump were Yang with 26 votes, 12.2% of the total vote, 25.7% of the Democratic vote, and Sanders with 22 votes, 10.3% of the total vote, 21.8% of the Democratic vote. Among Democratic candidates, Pete Buttigieg took third with 17.8% of the votes, followed by Elizabeth Warren with 11.9%, Tom Steyer at 7.9%, and Joe Biden at 6.9%. In Mason City's CSD's John Adams Middle School, Yang took the top with 61 votes out of the 142 total votes, 43% of the total vote, and 55.5% of the Democratic vote. Trump took second place at the middle school overall with 30 votes, 21.1% of the total vote, and 93.8% of the Republican vote, followed by Sanders with 22 votes, 15.5% of the total vote, and 20% of the Democrat vote. Trailing behind among the Democrat candidates, Buttigieg and Steyer tied for third, each with 6.4% of the votes, followed by Tulsi Gabbard with 4.6% and Biden with 2.7%. Overall, in Cerro Gordo County, Trump was in the first spot with 138 of the 355 total votes, or 38.9% of the total vote, followed by Yang with 87 total votes, 24.5%, and Sanders with 44 total votes, 12.4%. Among the U.S. Senate candidates, youth voters in Cerro Gordo County showed their support for Joni Ernst, who took the top with well more than double the numbers for second place Kimberly Graham, with 153 votes, or 47.2% of the total votes. Graham came away with 17.3% of the total votes, and Michael Franken came in third place with 10.5% of the total votes, followed closely by Eddie Morrow with 10.2% of the total votes. In the U.S. representative race, overall in Cerro Gordo County, Steve King ran away with 117 of the 213 total votes, or 54.9% of the total votes, followed distantly by J.D. Scholten at 19.7% and Jeremy Taylor at 12.7%. Of the participating students in Cerro Gordo County, 80.71% said they will register to vote when they are old enough. Statewide in the poll, as of 4:30 p.m. Tuesday, with more than 23,000 votes cast, Trump led all presidential candidates with 7,604 votes and more than 91% among Republican candidates. Yang was second in the overall totals with 3,370 votes. Yang led Democratic candidates, garnering 22% of the party's vote. Sanders was a close second with 21%. Buttigieg was third at 18%. And Biden sits in fourth place at 11%. No other Democratic candidate surpassed 10% of the vote. A lot of the youth straw poll participants are eligible to vote in the Iowa caucuses next Monday, and I hope many of them do, Pate said. The youth straw poll is designed as a hands-on learning experience to engage students in the civics process. Among U.S. Senate candidates, Ernst picked up 9,371 votes out of 19,753 cast. Graham led all Democrat candidates with 33% of the party's vote, followed by Teresa Greenfield at 20% and Franken at 19%. The Iowa Youth Straw Poll is open to students of every grade level and youth civic organizations. At each candidate was asked to submit a short video message to students. Those can be viewed at this link. I don't see the link, but I think if you would do a search for Iowa Youth Straw Poll, you would find it. Schools sign up for the event, and students cast their choices in myriad election races. In this round, 212 Iowa schools participated. Ray?
Suspect in car wash thefts, vandalism ID'd, one in custody. And this is brought to us by Grace Zapolinski of the Globe Gazette and comes to us from Mason City. One person is in custody and the other plans to turn herself in, according to police, in relation to a series of summer 2019 car wash thefts and vandalism in Mason City. Danielle Mania, 39, and Kate Kuchenmeister, 41, both from Rochester, Minnesota, have been identified as the two suspects for several incidents in August and September of 2019, in which police say they damaged property and stole from coin machines at multiple car washes, according to a press release by the Mason City Police Department. They are charged with felony ongoing criminal conduct, felony second-degree criminal mischief, and aggravated misdemeanor third-degree theft. Kuchenmeister is in custody. However, the release did not say where, and Mania is going to turn herself into the authorities, according to the press release. Diane?
Mason City man guilty of sex abuse given 5 years probation. A Mason City man who pleaded guilty to performing a sex act with a minor at his house was sentenced to 5 years probation. Ruben Ramirez, age 34, was given a suspended sentence of a maximum 10 years in prison with 3 to 5 years of probation and a suspended fine of $1,000, according to court documents. As a special sentence, Ramirez will be in the custody of the director of the Iowa Department of Corrections for life, with eligibility for parole after the 10-year prison or 5-year probation sentence has been completed. He is also required to register as a sex offender for life. Ramirez was charged with the felony third-degree sex abuse after he performed a sex act with a 15-year-old in his house, aware of her age, sometime between February 1st, 2019 and March 31st, 2019, according to the criminal complaint. He was arrested May 21st, 2019, and after a month, he was indicted at the federal level as a felon found after illegal reentry, as he is an alien, a citizen of Mexico who was deported February 9, 2011, after having been convicted of illegally re-entering the country January 20, 2011. Ramirez was sentenced by the United States District Court of Northern Iowa October 9, 2019, to 7 months of prison at the Federal Bureau of Prisons with 3 years of supervised release. His Iowa court sentence will be served concurrently with his federal court sentence, of which 4 months remain. Ray.
Iowa lawmakers stick with K-12 funding plans. And this is brought to us by Rod Bozard of the Lee Des Moines Bureau and comes to us from Des Moines. One proposal aims to help teachers control violent students. Education groups on Thursday welcomed legislative interest in boosting financial resources for schools and giving teachers more protections if they physically restrain students who are disrupting their classroom. However, representatives for teachers, parents, urban and rural schools, and others joined minority Democrats in telling Republicans who control the legislature that they were not offering enough new funding to cover inflationary costs, especially given the state's budget current surplus. "Please invest more in my kids while you have the money," said Louisa Dykstra, a Windsor Heights mother and a member of Parents of Great Iowa Schools, in urging Senate Education Committee to spend more than the 2.1% increase in supplemental state aid supported by the Senate Republicans. "This is timely, but it is not adequate," said Dave Dalton of Rural Schools Advocates for Iowa. Subcommittees in the House and Senate, however, each voted 2-1 to proceed with the initial proposal to boost the state's investment in K-12 education that are below the request of 3% to 3.75% posed by speakers during Thursday's meeting. "I feel comfortable where we're at," said Senator Tom Crayenbrink, Republican Fort Dodge, in advocating for the Senate's approach that he called appropriate and at a level the state could sustain while trying to meet the many and varied needs that government must address. Legislative Republicans currently have completed plans to increase state aid for Iowa's 327 public K-12 school districts. The House of Representatives stands at 2.5% base level addition, while the Senate would raise the funding by 2.1% for the school year that begins July 1st. Republicans in both chambers are proposing an increase of funding by $7.65 million to address inadequacy in transportation costs. Particularly, rural schools districts that face oversized expenses in running school buses and covering an extra $10 per student or $5.8 million to address property tax inequities that persist because after Iowa changed its school funding formula. State Republicans want to add nearly $2.5 million to provide resources for schools dealing with disruptive classroom students. Overall, House Republicans are proposing a K-12 education funding increase of about $107.8 million, and Senate Republicans are offering a $91.65 million increase. Earlier this month, Yeah, where is that?
Right here.
Oh, down lower. All right. Earlier this month, Governor Kim Reynolds proposed a $101.2 million funding package increase that called for a 2.5% boost in state foundation school aid. The current base cost per pupil under Iowa's K-12 foundation funding formula is $6,880. A 2.1% increase would bring that to $7,724, or $144 more, and a 2.5% increase would result in $7,052, an increase of $172 per student, according to the Legislative Service Agency. In all, state general funds currently devote about $3.3 billion to K-12 education.
Diane.
Warren proposes plan for fake news penalties. Democratic presidential candidate Senator Elizabeth Warren spoke during a town hall meeting Sunday in Davenport, Iowa. This is a special release to the Globe Gazette. Warren proposed a plan to address misinformation pushed by hostile foreign governments and any other entities attempting to meddle in U.S. elections. Warren proposed creating civil and criminal penalties for anyone who knowingly disseminates false information about when and how to participate in an election. Anyone who seeks to challenge and defeat Donald Trump in the 2020 election must be fully prepared to take on the full array of disinformation that foreign actors and people in and around the Republican President Donald Trump campaign will use to divide Democrats, suppress Democratic votes, and erode the standing of the Democratic nominee, Warren wrote in a social media post accompanying the policy announcement. And anyone who seeks to be the Democratic nominee must condemn the use of disinformation and pledge not to knowingly use it to benefit their own candidacy or damage others. Warren also proposed reinstating the position of cybersecurity coordinator at the National Security Council and work with other countries to enhance information sharing and create coordinated responses. Ray.
And it's now time to move to the remembrance page. Today we remember Kathleen K. Artis of Britt, Iowa, Nancy Rianne Miller of Steamboat Rock, Genevieve E. Turner of Belmont, Karen F. Johns of Four City, Lucille Blazer of Osage, David John Kisilewski, that's K-I-S-I-L-E-W-S-K-I, of Mason City, and Robert L. Turner of Belmont. Kathleen K. Artis, 99 of Britt, Iowa, passed away peacefully on Tuesday, January 28, 2020, at Grand Haven Retirement Community in Eldridge, Iowa. Funeral services for Kathleen Artis will be held on Saturday, February 1st, 2020, at 11 a.m. at First Lutheran Church, 75th Avenue Northwest in Britt, with Pastor Willie Rosen officiating. Burial will follow in Evergreen Cemetery in Britt. Visitation will be held beginning at 9:30 a.m. until time of the service at the church on Saturday. Kathleen Mary Arndt was born August 26, 1920, the daughter of Esther and Grover Arndt. Kate graduated from Iowa Falls High School in 1938. She was united in marriage to Robert Bob Artis on June 22, 1941, in Iowa Falls. Bob took Kay on what he considered a very romantic honeymoon to Whitefish Lake, Minnesota. It was there he introduced his blushing bride to his love for fishing. Needless to say, it wasn't long and Kay became hooked on their mutual hobby. In November of 1942, Bob was called to duty in the Army Air Force. He served more than 3 years in England, leaving Kay and their newborn son at home in Iowa. Upon his return, they moved to Britt, Iowa, where they built a home in 1948. Kay was, above all things, a happy and content lady. She loved her three children with unwavering support. They always teased her because they were given special names. Tom, the oldest, was her first little miracle. Carol, the only girl, had the lovingly nicknamed My Bossy Beauty. And the baby of the family, Jim, alias Chummer, had the distinguished moniker of My Pretty One. Her children could not win the battle of trying to trick Mom into saying she loved one of them more than the other two. It was always, I always love you the same. Friends, faith, and fun summed up the beautiful mother and wife. She cherished her friendship with numerous couples and ladies. She belonged to various organizations, book clubs, and much more that kept her busy. She had a strong faith that guided her life. Having fun on fishing trips with Bob, traveling to many parts of the world, hitting the golf course on a regular basis, and never missing an episode of the Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy were a few of her favorite things. A well-known secret to her longevity would have to be her daily cocktail of black velvet and Sprite. In lieu of flowers, memorials in Kay's name may be made to the First Lutheran Church in Britt. Ewing Funeral Chapel of Britt in charge of arrangements. Diane?
Nancy Rayanne Miller, 79 of Steamboat Rock, died peacefully at her home surrounded by her family on January 28, 2020. While she was under hospice care, a visitation will be held on Friday, January 31st from 5 to 7 p.m. at Krebs Chapel in Eldora, with a parish scripture service held at 7 p.m. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held on Saturday, February 1 at 10:30 a.m. at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Eldora, with Father Kevin Earlywine officiating. Visitation will resume from the evening prior to 9:30 a.m. at the church. Interment will follow at Steamboat Rock Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the church or at Steamboat Rock Fire Department. Abel's Funeral and Cremation Service, Grub Chapel, is caring for Nancy and her family.
Right. Genevieve E. Turner, 90, of Belmont, passed away Thursday, January 30th, 2020, at the Rehabilitation Center of Belmont. A joint graveside service with Ralph Turner and Genevieve Turner will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, February 3rd, 2020, at Belmont Cemetery. Louis Lane South in Belmont. A joint visitation for Ralph and Genevieve will be held on Sunday, February 2nd, 2020, from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Ewing Funeral Home, Lewis Lane South in Belmont. Ewing Funeral Home in charge of arrangements. Diane?
Karen F. Johns, age 71, of Forest City, died Wednesday, January 29, 2020, at the Mercy One North Iowa Hospice Inpatient Unit in Mason City. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. on Monday, February 3rd, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Forest City, with Pastor Rod Hopp and Associate Pastor Zach Anderson officiating. Burial will be held at Winnebago Lutheran Church Cemetery, rural Lake Mills. Visitation will be held from 3 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, February 2nd, at Cadaldo Schott Funeral Chapel, 505 North Clark Street in Forest City, and will continue 1 hour prior to services at the church. Arrangements are being made with Cataldo Schott Funeral Home.
Lucille Barbara Blazer, age 89, of Osage, Iowa, passed away Wednesday, January 29, 2020, at the Faith Home in Osage. Massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, February 4, 2020, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Osage, with Father Raymond Burkle officiating. Burial will be in Sacred Heart Cemetery in Osage. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, February 3, 2020, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Osage, with a rosary at 6:30 p.m. Lucille was born August 23, 1930, in Johnsburg, Minnesota, to Isadora and Kathleen Klapperick Freud. Her graduation from Adams High School in 1948, on August 30, 1949, Lucille married Kenneth Blazer at St. John's Catholic Church in Johnsburg, Minnesota. To this union, 7 children were born. Lucille and Kenneth farmed near Meyer, Iowa. They retired in 1988 and relocated to Osage in 1989. After moving to Osage, Lucille worked in the lunchroom at Lincoln Elementary School. Lucy was an avid gardener, excellent cook, loved to sing and dance, had a contagious laugh, and shared generosity with family and friends. Lucille will be remembered as a loving wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. And Buchheit Funeral Home, Champion Buchheit Funeral Home, in charge of arrangements.
David John Kozlewski, age 70, passed away on Tuesday, January 28, 2020, at Fairview University Hospital in Minneapolis, Minnesota, surrounded by his loved ones. A massive Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, February 3rd, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church of Epiphany Parish, 302 5th Street Southeast, Mason City, Iowa. The Reverend Josh Link will be officiating. Burial will take place at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City, Iowa. Visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, February 2nd, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, 126 3rd Street, Mason City. In lieu of customary remembrances, donations may be made in Dave's name to the charity of the donor's choice. Dave was born on June 2, 1949, the son of Harry and Betty Hendrickson Kozlewski of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. He graduated from John Marshall High School in Rochester, Minnesota. He studied psychology in Winona State College and went on to earn his master's degree in school psychology from the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. On June 17, 1972, Dave married Mary Cruden, and from this union, 2 beautiful daughters were born. He was a school psychologist with AEA 267 for many years, where he found joy working with students. He retired in 2010. Since then, he has thoroughly enjoyed golfing, woodworking, and spending quality time with family and friends. Dave was a loving husband, dad, and grandpa. His loved ones will miss his generosity, sense of humor, and voice of reason. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel of Mason City is in charge of arrangements.
Ralph L. Turner, 93, of Belmont, passed away on Saturday, January 25th, 2020, at Rehabilitation Center of Belmont. A joint graveside service for Ralph Turner and Genevieve Turner will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, February 3rd, 2020, at Belmont Cemetery, Lewis Lane South in Belmont. A joint visitation for Ralph and Genevieve will be held on Sunday, February 2nd, 2020, from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Ewing Funeral Home, Lewis Lane South in Belmont. Ewing Funeral Home in charge of arrangements.
And now, turning to the sports page, Newman's Bowl named Baseball Coach of the Year. Newman Catholic head baseball coach Alex Bowl was recently named the Class 1A Coach of the Year by the Iowa High School Baseball Coaches Association. Bowl led the Knights to a 38-3 record last season and has been at the helm for the past three Class 1A state titles and four of the past five championships. Bowl is also named Coach of the Year last season. Newman Catholic baseball team has high expectations coming into the 2019 season, and the Knights didn't disappoint, winning their third consecutive Class 1A championship and eighth overall when they beat El Burnett 11-1 on August 3rd at Principal Park in Des Moines. "It's a feeling you can't really describe," head coach Alex Bull said after the win. "The way these guys competed, these seniors this last 4 or 5 years, and having some of the best players to ever come through our program, for them to finish at the pinnacle, I'm just so happy." For Bull, the chance to get to send his seniors off with one final championship meant a lot. "You wouldn't want it to end any other way," Bull said after winning the 2019 title. "For all those seniors, I'm just so happy. We're going to enjoy this. I'm definitely going to miss them. It actually brings a tear to my eye, thinking about what these guys have meant to our program." The organization held its 52nd annual awards banquet on January 18 at the Marriott Hotel in Cedar Rapids. This year's North Iowa Area Award winners were District Coach of Year Awards, State Winner, Class 1A, Alex Bowl, Newman Catholic, Northeast District, Class 1A, Alex Bowl, Newman Catholic, Central District, Class 1A, Lance Thompson, West Fork. In the 200 Win Club, Bryce Conway of Riceville and Ethan Miller of Central Springs were admitted to that club. 25-year service award went to Troy Rude of Mason City. 15-year service award went to Ethan Miller of Central Springs and Lance Thompson of West Fork. And the presidential award went to Gary and Sandy Nias of Mason City. Ray?
I know that they have my back. And this is brought to us by Chris Zoller of the Globe Gazette and comes to us from Forest City. Forest City Cousins helped build wrestling family. For Steve Stout, treating his wrestling team like a family has always been a goal of his. So in the rare occasion when Forest City squad has three members from the same clan, their goal comes closer to reality. This year, brothers Brock and Kalen, along with their cousin Reese, are helping to lead the Indians by example, not only through their work ethic, but performance as well. This is something kind of new to us. We haven't had a lot of brothers or cousins on the same team, Stout said. It's strange, but it works really well for us, and I'd take it again. Wrestling is a unique sport. While each member of the team must perform as an individual, no team can succeed without a sense of camaraderie. Too stout, that responsibility starts with his wrestlers. The more you care about each other and fight for each other, the better you're going to do as a team, he said. As soon as everyone's got everyone else's back, your success goes up really quick. Brock, a junior and oldest of the three, says it's easy to lead the team because he knows Keelan and Reese will step in to help. I know that they have my back, so if I try to get the team to do something, they help me out, and then the team kind of just goes along with it, he said. I think that helps the team, chemistry-wise. It's a big deal. All three cousins have been wrestling from an early age. Reese said their fathers introduced them to the sport when they were around 4 years old. Our dads got together and thought we should try wrestling, and ever since, we've loved it, and we've been together and just kept wrestling, he said. Brock, who is one weight class away from his freshman brother Keelan, said having him on the team has been vital to his own success. Having my brother in the room and helping me out and having a proper practice partner also after practice is over is a big key of mine for the season, Brock said. Once the action begins on the mat, Keelan said they can still count on each other for support. Say I get a big win and my brother's right after me. He's going to be all hyped because he's going to be watching me, Keelan said. So he's going to go out there and just have a lot of adrenaline, and then Reese will be being right after. Brock pointed to a recent duel with Lake Mills where this dynamic was key. Keelan won a big match and kind of got me motivated because I was the next match up, he said. So that just gets me motivated even more just to go out there and hustle hard and try to win. Building on what the team has accomplished this year, the Indians jumped into the postseason on Saturday, where they will wrestle in the Top of Iowa Conference tournament at Osage High School. Brock, along with senior Christian Gunderson, were district qualifiers last season, but each fell short of the trip to state. If we get the kids to believe they're as good as we know they are, we could end up with three or five guys to state, Stout said. Diane?
Game Day, your guide to Week 11 in high school basketball. And this week's headline says, Forest City girls look to knock off West Hancock. We're getting close to the end of the regular season for high school girls basketball, and one area team has reigned supreme, West Hancock. At 18-0, the number 2 ranked Eagles have met every challenge and conquered it. As the Eagles move forward from their most dominant victory of the season, a 79-10 win over North Iowa, the question remains, just who can beat West Hancock? This brings us to this week's Globe Gazette Game of the Week, as 11-5 Forest City will travel to Britt to try to pull off the upset victory. After starting the season 5-0, the Indians stumbled a bit, losing four of their next six games. Lately, though, Forest City has found its stride again. In its past five games, the team is 4-1 with an average margin of victory of 23.75. The team's offense is not particularly high scoring, as sophomore Shea Delavue leads with an average of 12.5 points per game. But the defense has held opposing teams to less than 30 points in 7 of its 11 victories. That defense will be tested against an Eagles squad that averages 68.1 points per game is second in the state with 1,226 total points on the season, and whose top player, Rachel Lear, averages 20.2 points per game. To make things tougher, West Hancock is sixth in the state in assists and fourth in steals. If Forest City wants to do what no one else has done this season and slay the dragon that is West Hancock, the defense will need to do its best to keep Lear from taking over the game. What makes that hard is the Eagles' depth. Senior six-footer Amanda Chizik averages 11.3 points per game and has over 200 points and rebounds on the year. Kennedy Kelly has 182 points and averages 10.7 points per game. Even if Lear scores less than her usual 20, one of West Hancock's other players is more than capable of knocking down big shots. While the Indians may be able to shock the world, or at least North Iowa, and beat the Eagles, I don't think it will happen. Anything can happen in high school basketball, and with the regular season ending next Friday, every win is crucial for the teams on the cusp. But head coach Paul Sanius has built a pretty formidable team, and that will be able to push forward pretty much seamlessly after the injury to Madison Eisenman. With good shooters and a top rebounder and pretty decent defense, West Hancock will stay undefeated for at least another week. This article was written by Shane Lance. And the game of the week is going to be, again, the matchup is between West Hancock and Forest City. The time is, the game will start at 6:15 tonight, and it will be at West Hancock. Ray?
Iowa spring flooding outlook not so good. Soil in Mississippi River Basin is especially wet. And accompanying this article is a picture taken by Chris Zoller of the Globe Gazette, and it shows a vehicle is diverted by barricades from traveling under the bridge at First Street Southwest due to high flood water in the spring of 2019 in Mason City. This is brought to us by James Q. Lent, special for the Globe Gazette, and comes to us from Des Moines. Dealing with ice and snow may be more immediate concerns for Iowa. But Witt told Krajewski said it's not too soon to be thinking about sandbags and temporary flood barriers. The outlook for spring flooding is not so good, the director of the Iowa Flood Center at the University of Iowa told lawmakers Tuesday. At this point in time, it's very difficult to pinpoint where the trouble will be, Krajewski said, after a presentation to the Agricultural and Natural Resources Appropriation Subcommittee. A map he shared with the House and Senate members show Mississippi River Basin soil moisture data with the wettest or second wettest soil moisture on record for the past 65 years. But it's not only the water that is stored in the soil and the snowpack, but also when storms will hit and also how the spring warm-up develops, he said. Comparing the snow water equivalent, Krajewski said most of Iowa is in the same 1 to 3 inch range as a year ago. However, in far northern Minnesota, the snow water equivalent is at the above 4.9-inch range. Krajewski recently participated in a meeting in Boston with agencies that monitor stream flow and other indicators of flooding, and it looks like the situation would be at the upper end of the possibilities for a number of locations throughout the state. Krajewski told lawmakers he wasn't making a prediction but offering an outlook. Hopefully it will be nothing, but you should be mindful of the situation, he said. The best thing would be a gentle, nice warm-up so the water can drain. But, he said, I think we all should be concerned. Diane?
And a second story special to the Globe Gazette by James Q. Lynch. is headlined Weather Markets Challenge Nutrient Reduction Efforts. The director of the Iowa Nutrient Research Center sees some progress in the state's efforts to improve water quality, but said weather and commodity markets present a challenge. On the plus side, we've seen some increases in acres to cover crops and some of these other edge-of-field practices, Matt Helmers, the center's director, told the Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee on Wednesday. With the rainfall and some of the market forces, you know, it's a challenge. Back-to-back wet years with heavy rains have increased nutrient runoff. Commodity market forces have led to slight increases in the number of acres converted from perennial plantings and small grains to row crops. So that doesn't help us, Helmer said. The Nutrient Research Center was established by the legislature in 2013 to pursue science-based approaches to nutrient management, make recommendations on practices, and implement the state's nutrient reduction strategy. Since 2014, it has funded 92 research projects in land management, nutrient management, edge-of-field practices, and multi-objective research that includes hydroscience and engineering at the University of Iowa. The average funding for projects is $110,000 for a total of $10.7 million. Although Helmers sees progress in water quality improvement, Representative Bruce Beringer, a Democrat from Olwine, said the center is not the entity that moves the needle. It's the research arm, and its research has the potential to reduce nutrients in our water, he said. The policies to achieve that, he said, must be set by the legislature and the Iowa Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. Helmers agreed that ours is a fairly specifically focused on doing research about new practices or the performance of practices. Others are looking at the implementation. And he didn't make a funding request, but said later, we could definitely utilize more dollars, but we're very thankful for those we have. Helmers is most excited about research the center is doing on wetlands because I think they provide a lot of benefits beyond the nutrient reduction. You know, whether it's a waterfowl habitat, wildlife habitat, those types of things, you know, aesthetic value, maybe monarch habitat on the buffer around, he said. He also sees potential in the work being done on cover crops and what research call living mulch. It's a turf grass that goes dormant during the summer under row crops and reduces nitrate loss without negatively affecting crop yields. Helmers told legislators that it's important to find practices that have economic upside and then to communicate those to the farmers.
And just want one today highlight in history, and that is on January 31st, 1958, the United States entered the space age with its first successful launch of a satellite, Explorer 1, from Cape Canaveral.
And that brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, January 31st, 2020. Your readers have been Diane and Ray. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You are listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.